Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we have a very special guest. He is the executive producer of Days of Our Lives, and he's here to talk about his book, The Days of Our Lives. His name is Ken Corday. Hello.
Hello, Dave. Good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you. What in the world is it like to be a producer on a soap opera? I can't imagine what you go through it day by day.
Well, you know, it's the soap opera within the soap opera. You produce 260 shows a year. You end up loving the people you work with for the most part, and you have to love doing a soap opera every day, and you always have to remember you're only as good as the last show you did. So to your point, it's wonderful. I feel blessed to be able to work with such a wonderful group of cast and crew.
Reading this book, and it's a very interesting book, and I just feel the love that you have for all these cast members. I mean, I don't even know how many there have been over the years. There's hundreds, I would assume, but you're very close to all of them. Is that the way it is in real life?
It is. You know, it is what we call one big happy family, because you know, you're able to elbow with them on the floor every day. As the executive producer, I am not necessarily in the control room all the time, but I feel extremely blessed to have had such a wonderful group of people over the course of the 30 years I've been doing the show, and you know, it's I don't know, lucky stars. I'm guessing someone up there likes us under all three of those headings. And I find that actors coming from other soaps start to diminish their work there. There is a difference with Days at NBC.
I just can't.
Family environment.
Right. And what is a basic work day? How many hours do the actors work? I mean, what we see on TV, it's only an hour, but you forget how long a process it is to do this whole show.
Right. Well, you know, it used to be when there was a ton of money at NBC, we would sometimes have normally 12, 14-hour days where the cast could be called as early as 6 in the morning and not be done until 8 at night. Excuse me. Now, with, you know, certain economic constraints at NBC, we are shooting 7 shows in 5 days every week and getting out of the studio at 5 o'clock every day. So it's an efficiency factor, and it enables us to take 10 weeks of the year where we're not in studio. We don't have those high overhead fees, and in a way it puts the actors on their toes much more. They have to come to the set knowing their lines and ready for the cameras to roll. There's no dress rehearsal anymore. It is show up, know your lines, and be on time.
Wow, it sounds really difficult. I mean, I assume that they're all trained that way to begin with before they come to work on your show. I mean. But it sounds like it's a lot of work that, you know, you really have to be alert all the time. You can't just come in tired from the day before. You have to be ready to go.
Right. It is arduous. And, you know, to their credit, when you're doing 7 shows in 5 days, on any given day you could be doing scenes from 3 different shows. And, you know, it's hard for the actor or actress to say, well, you know, didn't I say this line yesterday, or am I saying it tomorrow? And, you know, that's up to the producer to keep that continuity going. But, you know, it is an arduous job. It's, you know, people in primetime or in feature films who have visited the set can't believe that, you know, we're able to do 260 hours a year, and now we're doing them in 40 weeks, which I think boils down to, do the math, 200 days a year.
That's a lot. It's a lot of hard work. I mean, there's no slouchers on daytime.
No time for that.
Now, why did you write the book? Why now to write the book? Have you been thinking about doing it for a number of years?
Yeah, an interesting question. The kernel for the idea really came to me because my 3 children never knew my parents. They never knew their grandparents. So the book started as a history of my mother and father in theater and then radio and television, so that my kids could know, you know, what their grandparents were like. And as I got to the time in 1965, the Days of Our Lives went on the air, I said, well, you know, I'm 100 pages in, keep writing. And, you know, as books do, do, they write themselves, especially when you're dealing with a book as opposed to a novel. You're dealing with fact only. So, you know, for me, it was a three-year process and extremely gratifying to be able to explain to the reader how, you know, the Corday family's personal lives kind of crossed over into days and vice versa. And, you know, at times for the best and at times not the best.
And you've had some, James, you've had tragedy in your life, too. And that's, yeah. I'm sure that makes work harder, too, just knowing what you've been through. I mean, with your brother, it's very heart-wrenching to read that about your brother and knowing what that must have done to you, what that must have done to your family, and how hard that was. How did you get through it?
Well, you know, as in any loss, there are stages of grief. And my brother's suicide at a very young age, it was numbing. Thank the Lord that, you know, my mother and father were no longer alive. The lesson learned, and we had never really delved into it on the show, was you will never see a story about suicide on Days of Our Lives. It's just so difficult for the actors to play, and I think more than anything, it's difficult for the viewers to watch.
Absolutely. I couldn't even imagine. I still remember McDonald Carey. I still remember watching him there was an Outer Limits episode I remember he was on, and that still to this day creeps me out. And he was a big part of that, and he was, of course, one of the biggest parts of your show. Do you feel his loss every day?
Well, we went through those stages of losing him and missing him and hurting, you know. And Mac's been gone over 10 years now, but yet his voice is still the signature for the show every day. And, you know, there's something very gratifying in keeping Mac's voice there. It's not like having him there, but in a way, for the viewer who's been watching the show for 30 or 40 years, it's a touchstone.
And he's kind of, and you have things in the book where you think he's like a ghost on the set almost. Is that really?
Yeah, more of a guardian angel than a ghost, and there are a few others too.
Yeah.
Mrs. Reed unfortunately passed this year.
Right.
At 96 or 97, depending on which birth certificate.
And you must have been very close to her.
And also my mother and father and some of the other actors who are no longer with us. It's as if they're watching over us. Not so much ghosts, but guardians. There are a few stories I wrote in the book about occurrences that happen behind the scenes, which I will leave to those who are, you know, who buy the book to read about. But you know, paranormal is, I guess, the word we would use.
Right. I found that what I was reading last night about that McDonald Carey and you feeling his presence and you seeing, you know, a light that you didn't think was lit, and it's got to be comforting to know to feel like he's there in spirit.
Oh yes. You know, we're not into, I mean, you will see on the show stories about the outer limits, the paranormal, the buried alive, the possessed by whatever, but strangely enough, there's a very positive feeling around the set that those that went before are still with us.
You go through all the characters in the book, and there's been so many people. Of course, you had the tragedy with Brendan Manet also, which must have been very difficult too, but you seem to get along with every actor on the show. Does that basically happen? Is it difficult to get along with everybody?
Well, 99% of the time, it's very easy. You know, everyone has a good day or occasionally a bad day, and my job is just to be able to ride out the storm or deal with the actor who perhaps doesn't understand, you know, what's going on in the story or what's going on with the show, and comfort them, because it's cyclical. You know, you find actors, characters that are in story heavy for a period of 4 or 5 months and then aren't in story as heavy for a period of a few months. And, you know, those that are new to it have to learn that. Those that have been there a while understand that, you know, that's the nature of soaps.
Right, yeah. Have you ever written 4 Days of Our Lives? I mean, have you ever written any episodes at all?
No. I leave that to the extremely talented head writer and script writers, because, you know, those are the ones that are the kind of true engine for the show. You know, my job is to kind of, I don't want to say overlord, but oversee, be the sounding board for the head writer on every show. I break down and bring the show before it goes to script, and we discuss it. But and I also, we also talk about, okay, what's the next week or two of stories? What's the next month of stories? What are the stories you're taking since 2011? But to take on that task of, you know, picking up a blank piece of paper and putting it in the typewriter and writing for 20 or 30 characters, that is the most daunting job in the business.
I can imagine. I can't imagine what they go through to get those.
Well, you know, it's, we...
And it's also, there's a time constraint, too, which makes it even more difficult.
Right. You have to write one show a day. We have to produce at least one show a day. And the old joke used to be, you know, if a writer could last as a head writer past 2 years, they weren't a Sherman tank. You know, they could keep going. In the history of the show, I can count the truly successful head writers on one hand. And they are mentioned in the book, those who, you know, were able to endure and not recycle the same stories, come up with something fresh and interesting, and keep the show, you know, young and alive.
Mm-hmm. Now, the show's been on for, is it 44 years or close to 45 now?
45 years, November 8th.
What do you think is the secret? What has kept the show going for so long? Obviously, your mother... You talk in the book about your mother, what a strong... She wanted this show to stay, and she was going to do everything she could, and it seemed to work. But what was it that kept it going?
Well, you know, we've been talking about family in this conversation, and that I think, I know, is the secret to days of our lives. We've had, you know, 45 years, basically three very, very strong, powerful families. The first was the Hortons, and then about 10... 12 years later, and came the Bradys and the Demeras, and it's that the generational history of family that you know, you have viewers today that are fourth generation viewers whose grandmothers watched the show and who grew up on their mother's knee watching the show, and you know, that is the key to, or one of the keys to our success, is to don't stray away from, you know, the core families on the show. Really, the key to the success of the show is dealing with romance, the first time around the block for a couple, or even the second or third time around the block, a couple finding their love again after 25 years. That's why viewers watch for that romantic escape.
And it's got to be heartwarming for you to watch that, too. You know, you feel like there's happy endings to things, too, did the show ever get close to being taken off the air? Did it ever?
Oh yes, there have been a number of times when we were close to the edge of the cliff, and I talk about a few of those in the book. And you know, that's where my job gets difficult, is to, you know how much to compromise with, you know, the network as opposed to the integrity of the show. Not that the network has a different view, but at times they're having different views on what is successful on the show and what isn't. And, you know, I have to stick to my guns. I can't sell out. And, you know, you're only as good as your last show. We are picked up for a period, whether it's 18 months or 2 years at a time. And, you know, we just can't rest on our laurels. Gee, 6 months ago we were great, so we're good for another year or so. You're really only as good as your most recent ratings.
And as it stands right now, how long is the show going to be on, that you know?
Well, we are definitely going to be on through September of 2011, and I have very high hopes well past there.
That's wonderful. Do you ever get tired of doing the show, of producing it?
Well, there is the fatigue factor. You know, I make sure I take a vacation into a year, but I also find if it goes for 2 weeks, you know, it's in my blood. I get kind of itchy for it. You know, you don't want to be away from it too long, because it takes, you have to ramp up again to get back into the show. Even on vacation, I'll try to watch it wherever we are, but it's not like being involved with the internal process. So, do I ever get tired of it? Well, it would be silly to say no, but it is truly my anchor in life, and a blessed legacy that my parents left me. And, you know, I just, again, I feel like the luckiest guy in the world to have, you know, been the recipient of this and been able to carry it forward 30 years.
Now, as we know, Deidre Hall is no longer on the show, and of course, that's a I miss her. You know, I miss.
That's just for now.
Yeah.
There's never a never in daytime. You
know? Oh, she could be back.
Of course.
Yeah, it's true. You know, you never really know. And of course, it was for economic reasons, and you talk about that in the book, and that's been hard for you, I'm sure. I mean, you have to be the one to call these, you know, and tell these people that, you know, what's going to happen. And how do you get through something like that? I mean,
that's the toughest part of my job. you know, there's nothing you can do that. You have to pick up the phone or best yet sit face to face with the person and say, look, we're going to have a parting of the ways. But we're not killing the character. We seldom kill a character of that great importance. And the time will come, or might come, when you're coming back to the show. There have been many, many cases of characters leaving the show and returning for long runs. So I think they understand that, although it never really eases the pain.
Right. And you talk about that in the book, too, about some actors who come onto the set, and when they haven't been there for a while and things are changed, I mean, there's a difference to the show. What? How has the show changed over the years?
Oh, well, I mean, the cliche is we've gone from scenes where you'd have two people talking over a cup of coffee for 3 minutes in directorial talk, you know, an establishing shot, a two-shot, then single, 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 long, long scene, talk, 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 cut to the next, and maybe have something like 12 or 10 scenes like that in the show. Today, it's a much faster-paced show. The scenes aren't usually much longer than a minute, minute and a half, and we'll have in each show, you know, 40 scenes. So the pace is faster. Audiences' attention spans are shorter, and, you know, our audience is persnickety. We don't want them to, I guess the word is surf or graze, around the channels, we want them staying tuned, even during the commercials.
Is it true that there's some, you can't say certain words on the show? I mean, that you're, I mean, and you're only allowed certain?
Well, it used to be much more stringent. I mean, to the point of trading a dam for two hells, or, you know, a hell for two dams. I mean, we all know that we don't take the deity's name in vain. That's a no-no.
Right.
And then there are six or seven words that the FCC will not allow us to air. I mean, cable is different, but network, you will hear those beef. But, you know, we never go to air with those kind of words. But it was a little bit more constraining, I would say, during the 60s and 70s when broadcast standards, which was an arm of the FCC, were really riding herd on every word that was said in any television show. And the conundrum to that is that yet at night, you know, after now it's 8, but then 9 o'clock, you can have as much murder and mayhem and bloodletting as you want, is that you couldn't use certain words or, you know, show people with their shirts off. Times have changed.
Yeah, they certainly have. What do you do when you're not working on the show? I mean, do you have time to do other things? It sounds like this encompasses a lot of your life.
Well, it does. And, you know, as I said, my mental health break is 3 or 4 afternoons of the week. I'll get out of the studio by 2 or 3 and go to the recording studio because I write all the background music for the show.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, that I've been doing since 1979. That was the way I found my way into the show. And, you know, I was going, after graduate school, I was going to start teaching composition, and it was just lucky enough for me that someone, the music director on Days, wanted me to write some music for the show, and as I said, I walked in backwards through the front door and said I was leaving, and lo and behold, here I am 30 years later. But you know, that is the other hat I wear, is, you know, as well as being the executive producer and composer on the show.
Of course, the hourglass, which is such a huge trademark of the show. Who wrote the music for the show, the opening music?
The original theme is written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, who wrote a number of songs for the Monkees. They were quite well-known British songwriters, and that was the theme they wrote. One of them is no longer with us. I believe it's Tommy Boyce passed away. I'm not sure yet. Check me on that. But for 45 years, their strains have been
Is yours the longest one that's been ever been on the air so far?
Well, we're
right now, I mean currently.
No, because As the World Turns is still on the air, and it went on the air in 56 or 58.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, it is going off the air in September.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah. We are the longest running dramatic show in the history of NBC television. The only two shows that have been on longer than us are The Today Show, which is news, and The Tonight Show, which, of course, is talk.
Do you have...
They predate us by about a year.
Right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on your words there. I wonder, is there a certain time that was particularly wonderful for you, or has it been most of the 45 years?
Oh, it's been most of the 45 years. I mean, every day I wake up and I'm grateful to have, you know, another day and another opportunity to make a show. There, you know, obviously the peak viewing years were in the 70s and 80s before the advent of cable, when, you know, our rating would be a 20 or 30% of the total viewing audience, whereas today, you know, if you get 10% of the viewing audience, you're a huge hit, and, you know, 2 to 5% makes you a marginal hit. Those are the golden years.
Right.
But now, you know, you have a thousand choices if you have a satellite dish.
Right. These pictures in the book are just really fascinating. I love looking at some of the old pictures of McDonald Carey and Francis Reed and some of your parties. They're just so interesting. And some of your older pictures, they're just amazing. They're just beautiful pictures. Do you have all these pictures in your possession?
Oh, yeah. Yes, those are archives, part of these archives. And we have actually the next book coming out through the same publisher is 45th anniversary. It's a total pictorial book of you know, the history of days, due out in November for our anniversary. It's what we would call a coffee table, a very large pictorial book, and some amazing photographs in there.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Did you write it? Or have...
Well, there actually is very little writing in it. It's just a table of contents, and there are a few captions, but for the most part, you know, it takes you through a day on the soap, starting with way back and all the way through today.
Now, I wanted to ask you about John Aniston. He's really Jennifer Aniston's father, right?
Correct.
Yeah, you mentioned him in the book, but you didn't mention that he was her father. I just wanted to, I thought he was, but I wasn't sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's still on the show?
Oh, yes, very much a big part of the show these days.
That's...
Hearing some heavy story, and John is a marvelous actor, and as is his daughter, but... We have never wanted to parlay her fame into ours. It's funny, though, that NBC, when they had the show Friends on with Jennifer on that show, had a character, Joey, that was playing a character that was on Days of Our Lives, patterned after one of our characters. And, of course, Joey, being Joey on Friends, screwed it up and, you know, sort of off the show, he fell down an elevator shaft, which was, you know, Friends' way of ha-ha-ha, but... You know, these kinds of cross-pollinizations do happen. You know, Allison Sweeney, who plays Sammy on our show, is one of the hosts of Biggest Loser. And, you know, that what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Do they still use teleprompters during the show?
No. We got rid of it was teleprompters in the very early days, when there was cue cards, which were hand-drawn every day. And those found their way off the set about 10 years ago, because we found the actors were just not coming in as prepared, would go up and you could see them looking off camera to pick up their next line. And so we said, sorry guys, you know, that crutch is now going to be eliminated.
How did they react to that? I can't imagine.
Well, at first was a little chagrin, but in the end it made for a more prepared actor coming in, you know, knowing when the camera light was on, they had to be on as well. They couldn't go, well, let's do it again. Let me read my card and pick it up from there.
You and I share a similar date, May 3rd.
That's my anniversary date.
And that's my birthday. So.
Oh, well, an auspicious day.
Isn't that amazing? When I read that, I'm like, wow, that's really cool. I'll definitely have to mention that in the interview. I thought that was really interesting. And actually, I think you mentioned May 17th. May 17th means something to you, too, I think.
May 17th.
Doesn't it? There was something about...
My mother died on November 17th.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, you're right. It is November 17th. I was thinking May. May 17th was my dad's birthday. You're right. It was November 17th.
Strangely enough, my firstborn was born on September 17th, 10 months to the day, minute, and hour that my mother died in the same hospital, one floor below.
Wow.
That, you know, that's, you know, truth is stranger than fiction.
Do you ever watch any other soap operas?
Occasionally I will glimpse the other soaps to see, you know, what the look is, you know, what the image looks like, more for technical reasons. It's more important for me to stay true to Days and to follow our story as opposed to trying to compare Days with the Ark and Restless or General Hospital. They're different soaps, and their format is different. They appeal to different parts of the demographic. So, do I answer your question? No.
Now, your mom was involved with some other soap operas, wasn't she?
Oh, yes. As you know, my father was very involved with Guiding Light on radio and then television, and was the first producer and director of Madison Returns, and my mother in radio had done a number of soap operas before she took over Days, but she had been out of the radio television business for 15 years at the time my father died.
Now, if you hadn't taken over as producer Days or Light, any idea what you would have done with your life?
Oh, I probably would have pursued, you know, a career in composing, you know, taught school at a younger age, and, you know, found a way into writing for film and for prime time. That's still a passion. I still love to write and play music, but that's not what came to be.
When you said earlier you write music for the show, how do you know what kind of music to write for each scene?
Well, what we do is we write a library of cues. You know, we have something like 5,000 cues I've written since 30 years ago, and not that we use the old ones, but I'm constantly replenishing them. You know, you write for different mood, whether it's, you know, sad, angry, happy, scared, loving, peaceful. You cover the gamut in your writing and leave it up to the music director to pick the cue and spot to put into the show.
Right. Is it difficult at all?
Oh, no, actually, it's a blessing. I think Malcolm Gladwell said that if you've done something for 10,000 hours and you're still doing it well, then it becomes second nature. And for me, writing music for the show is second nature. I just sit in the studio at the piano or at the synthesizer, and I feel like a conduit. You know, hands go to the keyboard, and there's the cue.
Yeah. So it sounds like you just really love music. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, do you actually go out to dinner with people in the cast? Do you ever do that? I mean,
there's you know, that's a great question. My mother, one of her lessons was, you have to be very careful who you make friends with in the cast, because the day may very well come when you're sitting across a desk from them firing them. So I'm very close with all the cast members, but on a personal basis outside of the studio, do I spend time with any of them? One or two. One is the godson to the godfather to my youngest boy, and another is a member of the same parish I'm in. But other than that, no.
Wait, you don't want to tell us who they are.
That's okay. That's spoiled fun.
That's okay. I was just curious. You can't help but get curious now. It's been such a, I mean, it's hard to believe it's been 45 years. I mean, I can remember watching it when I was a kid and just remember, you know, how it was enjoyable to watch. And the character, I mean, you have a lot of memorable characters. If you had to pick a couple memorable that are totally memorable to you and you'll never forget, could you pick any? Or are you just afraid?
That's like asking me what my favorite song is. Such a tough question. I mean, I address it in the book, The Seven Greatest Heroes, the 9 greatest heroines, the 6 ugliest villains, but no, it wouldn't be fair for me to say I have a favorite. There have been great stories, certainly, that involve these characters, you know, high water marks in the show, but no one favorite character. Wouldn't be fair. Of course, you know, in saying that, I think Tom and Alice is the original super couple in Days of Our Lives, and perhaps in daytime, set the standard for the rest on the show.
Right. I wonder, and Josh Taylor actually played 2 characters on the show. That's very, very unusual for that to happen.
Right.
Has it ever happened on a soap before?
On our show, no. There was, I mean, Davidson did play five different characters, but she was on the show as all five characters. It was just a bit of a lark Jim Riley had with her character at the time. But now Josh left the show. He did a number of primetime shows. He did the Valerie Harper show, which was later called Hogan's Family.
Right, yeah.
Another cop show. Then when he came back to Days, he was a different character than when he had left.
Yeah, I'm a big...
And I think there was at least a seven-year gap there.
Right. Why the decision to make him another character? I'm curious.
It was the writer's call, and I agreed with the writer. I said, yeah, he's a good fit as a return for Roman Brady. And it took a while for the audience to embrace it, but looking back, it was a seamless decision.
Do you actually get to cast anybody in the show, and how do you know that somebody's right for a role?
Sorry, you broke up a little bit.
I'm sorry?
Could you repeat the question? I kind of lost you.
Oh, that's okay. I just said, do you ever do any of the casting yourself, and how do you know that you have the right person to play that role?
Well, I'm involved with all the casting, as is the head writer and the network, and we'll read people at do table readings and go through, 10, 15 people, and then narrow that down to 3 to 5, and then put them on camera and do a screen test. And it's usually after looking at the screen test, no matter how wonderful someone's reading was in a room or table reading, when you look at how they work with their co-star, it's usually very obvious who the best of the lot is.
Right. So
we have seldom, if ever, said, okay, well, Elizabeth Taylor is available, so let's write a role for her. That's wag the dog, in my opinion.
But it sounds like it can be fun, too. It must be a challenge for you.
Yeah, it is. But again, I think it kind of shatters the illusion that, this is Salem, a fictitious town, anywhere USA. And when someone that's that large, larger-than-life star comes on the show, people bump on it a little bit. Although, Julia Roberts has always been a fan of the show, and were she willing to make a cameo appearance on the show? Yeah, I'd write that in right away.
Absolutely. I think everybody would love to see her on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any regrets in your life? It doesn't seem like you do, reading your book. It just seems like your life's been a lot of fun, a lot of adventure, and just a lot of hard work.
Well, yeah, I'm a believer that regrets are a waste of time. You learn from your mistakes, and you remember them and move on. But to sit here today and go, oh, gee, I should have done this a year or two ago, that's history. It's over.
And your show's won the People's Choice. It's won Emmy Awards. And is there anything that you haven't accomplished yet with Days?
Keeping it on the air 50 years.
You're getting close to that.
Yeah, that's the next big, that's the goal.
How will you feel when that happens?
Elated, I think we'll dress in gold that day and do a real golden anniversary show.
Is there anything, if somebody found out about you, that they'd be surprised to know? Any interesting things you could tell us about yourself that we wouldn't know by reading the book?
I turned 60 yesterday, and people think I look 45 or 50.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. That's interesting to me. To the viewer, I think that means nothing. Some of the, the tidbits, the anecdotes I tell in the book, I think are telling to my character, the journey I had to take before I came into the show. I just feel like the luckiest guy in the world.
Do they ever do any, outtakes from the show?
We used to keep a reel of outtakes when we had cue cards and the time to do it, and actors would almost purposely go up or make a joke. And then at the anniversary party every year, we'd show the outtakes. And everyone, I think they were hilarious. And there were a couple of TV blooper shows that Dick Clark had one that would borrow from us. But in these days, with serious time constraints and economic constraints, people just don't go up. We don't have those outtakes.
As an actor, do you have to love doing a soap opera in order for it to work?
Yes, you definitely have. That's rule number two. You have to love the medium. You have to love being on a soap opera, the soap opera you're on, and knowing that you're going to be sometimes working, you know, 5 days a week doing 7 shows, and it's okay to ask the stage manager or director, you know, what show am I in? Just help me out here. But, it, you know, none of our cast come in with a chip on their shoulder.
Is there anything coming up on the show that you can give us a hint about at all?
Well, I think, you know, right now it's a somewhat painful period because we're dealing with the loss of Alice Horton on air
right
this week and next, and there are at least, I should count them out specifically, 9 or 10 characters, very popular characters from the past that have come back to town to say their final goodbyes to her. And that, I would say, is, you know, what we're looking at in June. Past June, I'm going to have to tease you and say stay tuned.
Say, oh, I'm sure they would, people will. And you must get a lot of fan mail. Do you get lots and lots of fan mail from people who have watched for all the whole time?
We do get lots and lots of fan mail. I can't quantify it. It was the first job I had on the show, was opening it, reading it, you know, categorizing it. Right now, I just basically get a synopsis from the publicity department on how the fan mail is going. You know, if there's a real specific request, I'll deal with that. And again, I would rather read one letter from a viewer that has a difference of opinion or maybe some angst than 10 letters that say, oh, we love the show, keep it going. Because, you know, we want people to love the show, but it's more important to me to hear from people that may have a different point of view. And, you know, we're not faultless.
Do the fans have leverage? I mean, if say 1,000 people write in and say they hate a storyline, will you kill that storyline?
We might shorten it. You know, killing a storyline is sometimes cutting your nose off. But
yeah.
Yeah, we keep our finger on that pulse very, very carefully. You know, you're only as good as your viewers, you know, and you know, we listen to what they say.
And deservedly so. I think that's the smartest thing to do. I mean, you want people to love the show.
Of course, and you don't want to feed them something they don't like.
Exactly. It's been so much fun to talk to you, Ken. The new book is called Days of Our Lives. The Days of Our Lives. It's out by Sorts Books. Corday, Ken Corday is the author, and it's been just a pleasure to talk to you. And many, many more happy years with Days of Our Lives.
Thank you very, very much, and I hope we get to talk again soon. Yeah, you know, in November when we hit 45.
I would love to talk to you. I actually did an interview with Bill and Susan Seaforth Hayes when their book was out, and that was such a delight. They're such wonderful people.
They are truly wonderful.
You are truly blessed to work with a lot of nice people.
I know. Well, you're only as good as, well, how do I say it? You're only as good as your weakest link, and right now, you know, the chain is pretty solid.
Exactly. And
that was a mixed metaphor, but that's the best way I could put it.
And many more happy years to you. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you later.